Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org. Yeah, you might have guessed, it's time for Book Picks. Matt Tannenbaum joins us from the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts, with a list of titles to share. It's always a pleasure to have him on the program, but most of the time, Matt, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ray. Nice to see you here.
You know, I'm told it's National Pottery Month. Oh, Poetry Month.
It's not pottery. Yes. Ray, we gotta work on that.
So a little later on, maybe you recite a little?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to.
Splendid. Well, let's first start with some book picks, and then you can do some poetry for us.
The first one I want to tell you about is published officially on Thursday, but we have it in the store already. Women of Will, Following the Feminine in Shakespeare's Plays by Tina Packer.
Local hero.
Tina Packer, local hero, one of the founding directors of Shakespeare and Company in Lenox. They came to town, they're the new kids in town. I was there a couple of years before them. I got there in 76, they got there in 78. They did Midsummer Night's Dream, and then one year they did The Tempest. And Tina starts off her book by talking about directing The Tempest, and she saw the two characters, Ariel and Miranda, the two lead female characters at the end of the play crossing the stage and just nodding at each other or just noticing each other. They don't speak to each other in the whole play, but they're each now freed. Miranda is going off, you know, a brave new world. She sees a guy for the first time, mm-hmm. and Ariel is freed to pursue herself. And Tina realizes that this Shakespeare who wrote The Tempest was not the Shakespeare who wrote Kate in The Taming of the Shrew. And he took this long journey, and she says basically,
or somebody else wrote it.
Oh, Ray! Oh my God! There goes the whole book.
Oh, I'm so. Oh, did I wreck it?
There's no surprise ending in this book.
Okay.
Shakespeare took the journey, and somewhere in the journey, he fell in love, and that's around the time he fell in love. We don't know who it was, the Dark Lady, the Sonnets to the Dark Lady. That's when he wrote Romeo and Juliet. And Juliet was the first woman to have an equal footing, an equal standing with Romeo. They both were going to go up against their families. They both were going to go up against the social mores. And they were both going to take their love to the limit. And they did.
Hmm.
And after that, it was then Antony and Cleopatra, and the later plays where Shakespeare realized who women were. And this is a journey that writers take, that some writers take, some writers don't take. Women take this journey when they write about men, but men, like Shakespeare, took this journey and opened up the whole new world. And Tina's book is a very hopeful book. It's also so lovingly written. I mean, she's been directing and acting and working with Shakespeare for 40 years here in the Berkshires. Before that, she was Royal Theatre in London. And she does what I think is the best thing you can do when you're writing a book. It's a love letter to someone who wasn't there. You want to tell them something that you know. And that's what she does. I asked her once if she had dictated some of it. She said, no, she wrote it all. But I can hear her voice. I can see her sitting at her desk, and I want to write this now. I want to tell you this part. I want to tell you that. So, Women of Will, Following the Feminine, Shakespeare's Plays, published by Knopf. Book party at Shakespeare and Company. We're providing the product.
And I'm holding it up for the camera if you're watching right now.
On the 25th of April.
Okay.
And
a note
after his birthday.
A note from Sarah. Tina will be on the roundtable on Friday talking with Joe.
Okay.
About Women of Will. And she'll also be at the New York Writers Institute event on Monday, which is the
next
13th.
Monday. Right, yep. Tina is making the rounds, and she's very pleased. She was very pleased to see the book in the window the day we got it, four days ago. It was lovely. She came and signed some copies.
Nice.
Get your copy, get it signed, and then come to the party and be prepared to answer her questions, because she'll want to know what you think of it, and she's great.
It's your homework. Read it before you go.
Right.
What else do you have?
The next one I have is completely different. It's Donald Westlake, The Getaway Car. I promised Joe I would talk about this the last time I was on.
Yeah.
This is The Getaway Car, the collected nonfiction of Donald Westlake. The introducer, Lawrence Block, writes in the first line of the book, he says, If this is your first Donald Westlake book, stop, put it down, and go to the bookstore and get one of his novels. Get one of his mystery novels.
Yeah.
His Dortmüller or any of the others, because he is a treat. This I've been a Westlake fan for many, many years, and I only found out after he died that he lived right nearby.
Wow.
It was a shame. I really would have loved to have known him, met him, had him come over to the store. I wonder if he was on the station, if he'd ever come over here.
You know, something tells me he has been, but I'm not sure.
So his wife writes the epigraph to the book. She writes, No matter where he was headed, Don always drove like he was behind the wheel of a getaway car. So he writes these great novels. But in this book, he writes about writing the novels, and he writes letters to other novelists. He writes introductions to other people's books or introductions to his own, and it's a wonderful collection. If you don't know Donald Westlake, come by, take a look at this book, and pick up one of his books, his novels first, and then you can come back and get this one.
Well, I would think that it would also be interesting to read this, get inside his head and his creative process, and then go back and read one that you've read before.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's Donald Westlake. That's published, a paperback from the University of Chicago.
Okay.
And now switching gears one more time, or the next time, Mary Pope Osborne is also a local writer, and she writes the Magic Treehouse series. And I've been selling Magic Treehouse series for hundreds of years, and I never, well, almost 100 years.
Yeah, it feels like it.
And I have never read any of, them until last week when Mary Pope gave a address at the Berkshire Festival of Women Writers.
Yeah.
And they asked me to sell some books. I couldn't go in and hear her talk, so I sat outside at the book table, and I read three of the Magic Treehouse books.
Oh, I've read several. We read them out loud to the children.
Yeah. Right. They're terrific. I had never
They're fun.
The Lincoln book made me weep. And then
this
is a brand new one. This is the Magic Treehouse Super Edition, Danger in the Darkest Time. This is Jack and Annie. It's for slightly older readers.
Okay.
So, and it's slightly more complex. You know, this is not just an adventure. This is a mission. This is one of the Merlin missions. Those books came later on.
Yeah.
And so Jack and Annie go back and
how many are there in that series?
50-something.
Yeah. And I try to start with number one and go on. And
dinosaurs.
Somewhere after 12, I just started picking them at random.
You don't have to read them in any order. Oh, except maybe the Merlin ones. I'm not sure.
In order to get that whole backstory, it helps if you read the first one. Yeah.
So this is Jack and Annie, and they're great characters. And I don't read a lot of children's books, but I just fell in love with this writer.
Well written and a nice feel to them.
And it's a little more complex, and you get some tenderness. You get a child will. Like the old heavily illustrated children's books that had the Wyeth paintings that, you know, those pictures told 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get from Mary Pope's descriptions, from these little sentences, a tenderness that Jack and Annie feel toward something that happened in the past. And this goes deep into a child's psyche, I think. And this is what I really loved about Mary Pope Osborne's books.
I'll put that on the list.
Okay. And of course, Mary Pope, her sister Natalie, and I think with her husband Will, they write the Fact Tracker books. So let's say the Abe Lincoln At Last book of the Magic Treehouse.
Yeah.
I read the Abe Lincoln Fact book first, and all these facts then go into all these facts that they discover go into the novels.
And they're fun. The tornado one.
Right.
There's a tornado fact book which has been it's. Totally falling apart. It's been read so often at the house.
Right.
By the way, we're talking with Matt Tannenbaum of the bookstore in Lenox. We have about 3 minutes left here, and we need poetry too.
Okay,
so
okay.
Save time.
One more book that I also told Joe I was going to come back and read and talk about another Patrick Modiano book. This one is Dora Bruder, and he's the Frenchman who won the Nobel Prize in Literature last fall.
Mm-hmm.
This book, Dora Bruder, is like a fact tracker. Of his other book, Honeymoon, which is all his books are about, all his stories are about the occupation. And this is a true story of a girl who runs away and gets lost, disappears during the occupation in Paris and what happens to her.
Huh.
And it's haunting. Dora Bruder, published by the University of California Press.
I see you haven't quite finished it.
Oh, no, I just stuck that in there.
Oh, I see.
And then the last one I want to talk about is a new book. It's coming in the store today. I don't have a copy of it, but I got my sister did the design on the book.
So oh, yeah?
Rose does that, and I got the blurbs on the back, and the blurbs on Michael Gizzi's collected poem. Michael Gizzi was a poet who lived in Lenox, born in Schenectady, lived all his life in this area, and died about 5 years ago. Here's a blurb on the back of the collected poems of Michael Gizzi by Lisa Jarnot. Cross James Joyce and Jack Nicholson in a high-energy construct machine, and you have Michael Gizzi's poems. He will tell you everything you knew was true but didn't have the guts to say. And then Kit Robinson says, in the hyperbolic vernacular of the barroom confessional, Michael Gizzi delivers a full bag of urgent messages, their sources detached from the old, weird America of a not-so-distant past. Impossibly rich, these jam-packed audibles are spring-loaded to jackknife off the page. Gizzi's word jazz is coiled, mortal, and alive.
All right.
So, poetry. It's Poetry Month.
Okay.
And we're gonna have a celebration of Michael's collected poems sometime in June.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in honor of Poetry Month, I would like to recite a few words of Chaucer's the prologue to Canterbury Tale.
As we say in the biz, play us out. It's Matt Tannenbaum of Lenox, Massachusetts, the bookstore.
When that April with his shores of Ceuta, the Drata March hath pursed to Ruta, and bathed in every vein its switch liquor, of which virtue engendered is the floor. When Zephyrus, eke with his sweet breath, inspired hath in every holt and heath, the tender crop and the youngest son, hath in the ram his half-cores erun, and small fowls makin' melodia, that sleppin' all the neat with open ear. So pricketh him nature in her courages, then longin' folk to go on pilgrimages. And specially from every shearer's end of England to Canterbury they wender, the holy blissful martyr for to seek, that him hath holpen when that they were sick.
Matt Tannenbaum.
Ray.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.